Welcome to It's All Politics from NPR News. I'm Ron Elving. Ken.
Oh, sorry, I just need some stimulus.
Yeah, Ken, you need more than a little stimulus. I would say you need about $800 billion worth of stimulus.
And the economy will improve when, Ron?
I don't think anyone knows when the economy is going to improve or even if it's going to improve because of this particular bill. Even President Obama, in campaigning around the country and telling everybody how necessary it is, has said several times, we don't know for sure it's going to work. We just think it's better than doing nothing.
But the two parties do know because the Republican Party, save Olympia Snowe, Susan Collins, and Alan Spector, voted.
If you consider them Republicans.
Well, that's a good question, because they're hippos, right?
Rhinos. Republicans in name only.
Thank you very much.
Hippos.
Okay. Yeah, thank you. So, all the Democrats in the Senate voted for it. All the Democrats in the House, save 11 Democrats, voted for it. So the parties are at opposite ends, but the American people don't know what it means and what's going to happen.
All the regular Republicans in the Senate, the other, what would we talk about, 38 Republicans, right, minus Judd Gregg, who didn't vote on the crucial procedural matter because he's about to join the cabinet. All the Republicans in the House, virtually all the Republicans in the Senate, are not only against this, but they're out there arguing in vituperative terms about what a terrible idea it is and how it's going to completely bankrupt the country. There is nothing bipartisan about
the thing
this.
Is, we don't know what it's going to do to the country, and that's what's kind of interesting to watch Barack Obama do his magical mystery tour this week in Elkhart, Indiana, and then Fort Myers, Florida.
And then Virginia, and then on to Illinois, right, saying, in essence, I don't know if it's going to work, but we got to do something.
Yeah, and Republicans, for their part, Republicans say it's probably not going to work. It's just a boondoggle. It's spending out of control, and it's big government. And so nobody seems to know what it's going to be done. But Barack Obama has made the case, tried to make the case, that something has to be done, and a bad bill or a weak bill or an ineffective is better than no bill at all.
Yes, and I think most of the Democrats are signing on for that, and a good deal of the national economic community is buying into it, too, because the alternative, having everyone throw up their hands in Washington and say, we just have no idea what to do, that's not going to increase confidence in the economy. It is not an alternative to do nothing.
Okay, so but the political fallout, well, Susan Collins was reelected last year. Olympia Snowe isn't up until 2012. That leaves Arlen Specter.
Up in 2010 and now looking at a primary because of what he's just done.
I suspect he was looking in a primary all the time, even though Pat Toomey, who ran against him in 2004, says that he'll probably run for governor. But I suspect that there will be serious conservative opposition to Arlen Specter. And here's what's different from 2004. He no longer has Rick Santorum on his
behalf.
Maybe
Rick Santorum runs against him himself.
And he no longer has President Bush working on his behalf. Both Bush and Santorum probably carried him over the
That's right. They
top.
Gave him cover. They gave him cover, and he survived his primary. If there were a straight-up primary with a really respectable Republican true conservative running against him, Specter would probably be in big trouble. But then, in the end, what does that mean? It probably means in 2010, Pennsylvania gets its second Democratic senator.
After having decades...
They had typically two Republicans.
Harris Wofford won a special election in 83, but for the most part, Republicans don't lose Senate races in Pennsylvania. The last Republican incumbent to lose before Rick Santorum was in 1956 in Pennsylvania.
Can I hold in my hand a list of all 10 economic stimulus bill conferees from the Senate and the House, five from the Senate, five from the House. A lot of big names here. We've got Senate Majority Leader
Ted Kulongoski.
No, not that big. Oh. We have Senator Daniel Inouye from the Appropriations Committee, right, his opposite number from the Republican Party, Thad Cochran, Max Baucus, and Charlie Grassley, the senior Democrat and Republican from the Finance Committee. Big names here. But you know what, Ken? All these powerful people from the House and Senate who are sitting down to have these closed-door meetings to work out the differences between the House version of the economic stimulus and the Senate version, I don't think they're really making up the decision here. I don't think these 10 people are the true conference.
Well, I was going to ask you about that because I noticed that the people who – one of the most influential people, of course, Susan Collins of Maine, the one of the three Republicans who broke with her party to support this.
She's not there.
She's not on the list.
Neither are the other two Republicans.
Olympia Snowe and Arlen Specter.
Exactly. The real negotiations are going on between those three Republicans who obviously have to remain pleased or they're going to bail on the whole thing. And if they bail, then it all goes down. And I would say Rahm Emanuel, because he's the guy who's going to have to go back as the president's chief of staff, but a former member of the House Democratic leadership, and say, guys, you don't like it, but you got to vote for it. And if he's not pleased, then the whole thing goes down. So he's talking to the Republicans. They're talking to the White House. They're talking to a few other key people in the Senate. Perhaps Nancy Pelosi is into that negotiation. But that's where the real deal is going to be done.
And what's also interesting is while the rest of the Republican Party seems to be angry at the Collins and Snowes and Specter, the House seems to be angry at the Senate because of all the perks thrown in there to attract Republican support in the Senate, where in the House, of course, you don't need to attract any Republican support.
Well, you know, they might have put things in the bill in the House to attract Republican support, except the Republicans had already signaled they weren't going to vote for it in any of them.
And I suspect there wasn't, certainly didn't have the incentives like the tax cuts you have in the Senate in the House version, because, again, if you have a majority of one in the House, that's enough.
I mean, you know, it's interesting that the percentage of Democratic control is virtually identical between the two bodies. If Al Franken is going to survive the challenge to his apparent razor-thin victory in Minnesota, they will have 59 votes, counting the two independents. That's exactly 59%, of course, of the 100-member Senate. And the number of Democratic seats in the House after the election was exactly 59%. So they are equally balanced in the two chambers, and yet in the House, it's considered walk-away, lights out, total control, right. And in the Senate, it's considered not enough to get anything
That's
done.
Not because of the Democrats or who controls what body, but that's the rules of the House, and that's the difference between the House and the Senate.
Which party is going to benefit if the economic stimulus package passes?
Democratic Party.
And why do you say that?
Because the Democratic Party is responsible for, first of all, the results of the 2006 and 2008 elections, especially the 2008 election, were a referendum on the economic situation in the country.
I don't think the Democrats are going to benefit from getting this economic stimulus package passed. I think they are going to suffer less than they would if it failed utterly. If the president were not able to put anything in place, show any kind of responsiveness to the nation's needs, that would be a killer. That would kill their numbers, all of their numbers. So if the Republicans could stop this economic stimulus plan, they would, just for that one reason.
It doesn't matter who benefits in the short term because there's no election in the short term. It doesn't matter if President Obama's poll numbers go up and Democratic approval of Congress goes up. What matters is if this bill works and if people's economic situation is not improved by 2010, then the Republicans benefit.
That's
so,
right.
So
but,
it doesn't matter right now.
But it doesn't
now.
Matter what happens right now. On the other hand, it's being constantly discussed right now. And the perception of either an upward or a downward trajectory for this presidency is critical to what actually happens. The constant discussion on the web, the constant discussion on cable television, talk radio,
blogs,
including the best blog of all, which is, of course, Political Junkie on NPR.org.
Oh, wow.
All of that constant palaver, back and forth, constantly, that is going to influence whether or not Barack Obama can be a successful president and whether or not this can be a successful Congress. So these perceptions matter well before we get to an actual election day.
I agree, but ultimately I thought it was very interesting watching Barack Obama on the stump in Elkhart, Indiana, before the Senate voted, and afterwards in Fort Myers, Florida. But he almost seems like he's still campaigning, and I suspect that given the fact that he did such a good job campaigning in 2008, perhaps maybe the way to govern is to continue the campaign, because he remains very popular. I think the American people still want this stimulus plan to work. I think, well, everybody wants it to work. The question is whether it does work.
One big difference, though, is that during the campaign, he could be very long on music and very short on details. He could talk a lot about grand and lofty goals. But now he's been elected. Now he's got to get a guy like Tim Geithner and put him out there to say what we're actually going to do to save the banks. And when they do that and they don't have much detail, people just go, what's happening? They grab their heads. The market goes down. That is not going to work. There is a fundamentally different challenge before him now, and continuing the campaign is not enough.
But back to the economic stimulus bill for 1 second. If I were a Republican, what I would do is let the Democrats pass it and then watch the reaction next week when lawmakers go back home to listen to what constituents have to say.
Largely negative. Yeah. I don't think there's any question that it'll be largely negative. I mean, people who are upset about this thing are going to keep talking about it. People who want to see it passed are probably not going to want to keep talking.
And the only election coming up, although there's no date yet, is the House seat to fill Kirsten Gillibrand's House seat. Republicans really want that back.
Deep-dyed old Republican seat district.
Right.
And
right.
It should go back to the Republicans, and they've got a lively candidate.
Right.
There's really no reason why they shouldn't take that one back. And when they do, of course,
they'll sell it as a repudiation of the stimulus package
and the whole Obama presidency.
Agreed.
It's over. It's done. Okay. Enough substance, Ken. What about politics? Do we have any records being set this week in the House of Representatives?
We have John Dingell, after 19,420 days serving in the House of Representatives.
That works out to roughly 54 years.
Elected in December of 1955 following the death of his father, ironically, John Dingell Sr. but John Dingell was elected in a special election in December 1955.
Ah, so it's 53 years.
On Wednesday, he broke Jamie Whitten, the Democrat of Mississippi's record as the longest-serving member of the House in history. You know, he was a congressional page. He was on the House. He was on the House floor when FDR gave his Day of Infamy speech. He was on the floor during the dramatic civil rights battles in the 50s and 60s.
Let me just ask you a question.
Sure.
Is it a good thing that people serve that long in Congress? I mean, the people in Congress are always not only saluting, but they're genuflecting in front of seniority. It is a kind of deity to them, despite the fact that they all know that these districts have been gerrymandered to the point where they're almost impossible for an incumbent to lose. So just the fact that somebody's been around for 50 years, does that necessarily make them a great congressman?
No.
Or does it just make them a person who's been, like a rock in the stream, in place for a long time?
But as Bill Clinton said Tuesday night during the ceremony at Statuary Hall honoring Dingell, he said that it's not so much how long you've been there, but what you've accomplished. And if you look at the record of John Dingell, he has accomplished a lot of things.
John Dingell has accomplished a great deal. He's been there a very long time. He's been a very powerful chairman of a committee that he largely created by pushing together two other committees, Energy and Commerce. And much of what he has done with respect to the auto industry, greenhouse gases, is going to be remembered, well, let's say,
not fondly, by
people who have to live with the environmental consequences. And I would argue people have to live with the collapse of the auto industry, which he's fought so hard to protect, but ultimately put in a position
where it is today. And his view on auto emissions probably what got him dumped as chairman of Energy and Commerce last year to Henry Waxman.
No question. Right. A man who comes from Southern California and has fought against the whole smog and greenhouse gas.
A very distinguished record with blemishes. Do we agree with that?
Yes. But let's also say he is the guy who every 2 years introduces universal health care, a bill that his father carried in the 1930s and something that he has cared about throughout his career and will probably be carried on by his son, the third generation of Dingells to hold this seat coming up when he finally does retire.
Okay, speaking of Dingells, Stormy Daniels is thinking of running for the Senate in Louisiana.
Yes.
Stormy Daniels, a porn star.
Yes.
And I think she might sully the reputation of Louisiana
yes,
politics.
Yes, it would be at the end of the pristine era of Louisiana.
Two words, David Vitter.
Well, David Vitter would be her opponent. She would be running against the incumbent senator, David Vitter, who, of course, became famous as one of the clients of the D.C. madam, or at least he seems to have been on
his
her
phone
call
number
list.
Appeared there, right?
His
exactly.
phone number appeared there, and the explanations for how it accidentally got there have never been terribly persuasive.
I know what it was. Rosemary Woods was reached over and accidentally erased.
Put his phone number on that. That's probably what happened. All right. So David Vitter seems to have at least temporarily survived those stories and some other stories that came out of New Orleans about his social activities. He seems to be doing all right for re-election.
Republicans are behind him. His wife has forgiven him. The Republicans have forgiven him, even more important.
Doesn't look like he'll have a primary. Doesn't look like he'll have the world's strongest opponent to him running from the Democratic side when he runs in 2010.
Right. But we do have other candidates who have announced this week, or kind of announced. Meg Whitman, the former eBay executive, going to run for governor of California.
She says she can't stand by.
I think if the Republicans are going to be viable in a state like California in 2010, you can't have a politics as usual person. You probably need a business person. And I have said this, and we've said this on the podcast. Had Mitt Romney run for president in 2008 as somebody with business acumen and not a late conversion to conservative politics, I think he would have been far better off. But having said that, Meg Whitman may be the way Republicans go, because the Republicans are not very popular in California, shall we say, right now.
Schwarzenegger is obviously battling an extraordinary budget crisis there. And I'm not sure it's going to be entirely seen as his fault if everything in terms of services and prisons closing and so forth falls apart in California. I'm not sure that the Democrats are going to benefit politically from what's going on there now.
But I suspect they would, because as Pete Wilson was so unpopular in California, it led to Gray Davis. And then when Gray Davis became so unpopular,
it led to Arnold Schwarzenegger.
So it's cyclical.
It's cyclical, but it's also personality driven. I'm not sure it's so much right, left, or Democrat, Republican. Meg Whitman could be as much different from Arnold Schwarzenegger as anybody the Democrats put up. She's a woman. She's a success in business. She is very well spoken. I think she might very well give people a fresh sense of going forward in California.
Okay, on the Democratic side, we have Antonio Villaraigosa, the mayor of Los Angeles.
Speaker of the House of the Assembly, rather, in Sacramento.
Gavin Newsom, the mayor of San Francisco, Lieutenant Governor John Garamendi, and Jerry Brown, the Attorney General, and maybe, we keep saying maybe, probably unlikely, But Dianne Feinstein, all of 75 years old, everybody says if she wants the governorship of California, she can get it. I suspect she doesn't run for it. But Jerry Brown may come back, and that's kind of weird. I mean,
Jerry Brown, the governor in the 1970s, like Governor Moonbeam, right? Extraordinary. His career has never actually ended. Politically, he is still alive. He could come back, which is more than we can say for this week's political podcast.
You can follow NPR's political coverage at npr.org/politics.
I'm Ron Elving.
And I'm Ken Rudin.
Join us again next week for It's All Politics from NPR. California, here we come, right back where we started from.